Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. June 23, 2020. Faith above reason, accepting the opinion of a friend. Question: is it possible to call accepting the opinion of a friend, even though it is the opposite of one's own, faith above reason? If so, how do I do it without disregarding my own opinion? Answer: faith above reason means contrary to my opinion, I accept the opinion of a friend and follow it 100%. I am trying to make his opinion, even though it is the opposite of mine, become mine. You need to experience it yourself, and gradually you will be able to understand what it is. Faith above reason is a system of spiritual perception, when you begin to see the spiritual world above our world or through it. It's not easy. You need to spend a lot of time and effort until you start to perceive everything this way. This is a completely different system of the universe, as if you have a completely different mind, feelings, and thoughts. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, June 16, 2020. Discover what we are living for. Question: people believe they are entitled to pleasure and never think anything can happen to them. For example, if a person buys a lottery ticket, one hopes to win even though the odds are 1 in a million. But it is much more likely that he will be hit by a car when he goes out on the street, yet we don't think about that. Why is this? Answer: a person thinks only about the things he wants. Therefore, he doesn't think about the day of his death. Instead, one thinks about how to gain something for tomorrow. Question: since nature has developed us this way, how can we use it? Answer: what is good and what bad is measured against the result, what you finish your life with. And the goal of our life is to reach the highest level of existence, which is defined as eternal and infinite. Relative to this result, you must cross the border between life and death. Question: does the fact that we are so vulnerable and neglect the reality that something can happen to us, moves us to the goal? Answer: that is precisely what advances us so that we come to the realization of the need to understand what we live for. From Cab TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era, April 23, 2020. Fear of not being afraid of the Creator. Question: how can we understand what the fear of the Creator is? Is it fear of punishment for transgressions? Is it fear that the Creator will push me away, or is it another fear? Answer: at the corporeal level, there are about 800 types of fear. But in spirituality, there is only one fear, the fear of not being afraid of the Creator. Question: and what is worse, the fear of not being afraid of the Creator or the fear of death? Answer: it depends on the level of the person. But, in principle, the most important thing is still in relation to the Creator. When a person is on a spiritual level, death for him is not something that causes fear. Fear causes man to disobey the Creator because there are many egoistic obstacles that hinders a person. Question: if a person comes to a clear comprehension of the higher force, does he still experience corporeal fears? Answer: I do not know because I myself am not at that level yet. This is the level of absolute, complete correction. But, in principle, until the very end of correction, there remains the possibility of corporeal fears, which the Creator develops in man on purpose. This does not determine one's personal level but that the Creator is now developing such an attribute in him. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, April 26, 2020. Can we reveal the Creator with our mind? Question: what is the difference between feeling the oneness of the Creator and the cognitive perception that there is none else besides Him? Answer: by cognitive understanding, we mean with our brains. They are a product of our world and cannot provide us with anything sensible. People have been trying to reveal the Creator for ages and nothing came of it. So, You should not try to do it only with your resources, with your mind and feelings. Let us study the wisdom of Kabbalah and try to achieve the revelation of the Creator through it. This will work. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, December 1, 2019. How can we explain the wisdom of Kabbalah? Question: how can we convey to people who come to study for the first time what the wisdom of Kabbalah is about in a nutshell and how it enters the learner's emotions? Answer: it is impossible to simply convey the wisdom of Kabbalah in words. A person needs to gradually explain it to himself. I cannot tell him all about it in one sentence. The wisdom of Kabbalah reveals the meaning of life to a person, the meaning of creation and how it was created, how it evolves, and where it is leading us, how we participate in the process, and what our ability to impact our fate and attain the goal of creation comes down to in a correct and quick way. The wisdom of Kabbalah is not related to religion or philosophy. It is a separate wisdom that Adam received almost 6,000 years ago, and since then it has been living and developing in humanity. We must gradually accept, learn, and internalize this wisdom. This wisdom does not oblige us to do anything but good. It is through the good connections with others that we reveal the upper world, the Creator, and at the same time cannot harm anyone or do anything negative in any way whatsoever. There are no limitations to studying the wisdom of Kabbalah, and whoever wants to study can do so. But a person who wants to study seriously must already keep certain conditions, not limitations, but conditions, as to how to study in order to truly fulfill this wisdom inside him. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, December 1, 2019. New Life 1203, Balancing Mind and Emotion.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitza. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about the balance between intellect and emotion. There are people that are more intellectual, people that are more emotional, but all of us have an intellect and emotions, and this is what we'd like to talk about today. Yeah, the intellect and the emotion. These are the two things that actually guide a person. The mind, the intellect, tries to be more responsible, to be in control, manage things in a more balanced way, could sometimes be critical or hesitate. And versus that, the emotion is the part that allows a person to experience life, feel it. He feels sadness and happiness and love and joy and pain and many, many different emotions. And there's this constant dialogue inside a person between the intellect and the emotions. And really sometimes the emotions, they overwhelm us and they take over the entire system. And sometimes the intellect puts the emotions aside and says, wait a second, I'm in control now. So today we'd like to understand the role of each of these and afterwards also how to balance them out. So first of all, what is the role of emotions in our life? Their role is very bad. We're operated, activated by our emotions, desires. It's one and the same. And we want to all the time realize, actualize every desire, every emotion that comes to mind, that I feel in my heart. I want to simply actualize it. An emotion that awakens all the time grabs me, directs me, wanting for me to fulfill it. And depending on what society am I in, what kind of environment am I in, what kind of guidance and education did I get, in short, where was I raised, what kind of home, and so on. Accordingly, I work with my emotions. But if not, my emotions simply overwhelm me. And precisely in the balance between the intellect and the emotion, can we differentiate people? Because everyone has emotions and everyone has an intellect. But to the measure to which they're balanced, to the measure to which different emotions act inside a person, and along with it, he has an intellectual ability, an inner force that can deal with these emotions, that he can so-called control himself. Accordingly, a person acts. When I asked about emotion, you actually answered about the desire. Now, at least the way we see it, the desire is one thing and the emotion is another. What's the difference? A desire is more of a yearning to attain, achieve, get something. An emotion is an emotion. It could be pain, joy, happiness, not necessarily that it's related to a certain desire. This is at least how people see it. An emotion is many times a result of something that we have experienced. A desire, maybe you, as a psychologist, that's what you think. But I, as a Kabbalist, I divide it in a more simple way. A person has an emotion or a desire, which is one and the same, and his mind, intellect, and that's it. There's only what we call mind and heart. The mind are the thoughts. The thoughts that can control the emotion. And the heart is the emotion. So why do Kabbalists really draw this connection between the desire and the emotion? Because in the connection between the intellect and the emotion, in this balance, this is where we exist, and we want for it to exist in some kind of orderly fashion, for it to be somehow connected, so that my emotions will be under the supervision of the intellect, and that the intellect, the mind, will work only in order for me to realize my emotions in a good and correct way, so I won't harm myself or others. I need it. So, when I want something, I have a desire for something. To drink, to sleep, to eat. When you realize this desire, then you feel an emotion. When the desire feels how full or empty it is, then that's called an emotion. But it's the same desire. It's a phenomenon within the desire. So an emotion is a phenomenon inside the desire. The desire comes first. The desire comes before everything. That's the initial thing. The Creator created a desire. We are desiring beings. This is what determines. Now, when I have a desire, then I start developing it. Whether I like it or not, I want to realize it. And then, throughout evolution, throughout history, throughout different things, from generation to generation, I receive what we call reshimot, different impressions of how to work with the desires, with the emotions, and to realize them or not, to be cautious or not. And from that, I build my intellect. Out of that, I build my mind. And who knows how many generations we've already been through. And out of that, we have built a system of perception. A system in which we research, understand, feel, consider, decide. And then we start going into systems that exist between the emotion and the intellect. The influence of the intellect over the emotion and the influence of the emotion over the intellect. So what is the role of the emotion and of the intellect in our life? More correctly put, in the wisdom of Kabbalah, we don't talk about the emotion, but about the desire. So, the desire that exists in me, I want to manage it by the intellect in order to realize the desire in such a way that it will bring me to the goal that I feel that I want to attain. One more question. To help me get what I want. That's the role of the mind, of the intellect. Now, you started this show with saying that when we asked you what is the role of emotions in our life, you said that they have a very bad role. What did you mean? Because they want to control us without the intellect. Our desire to receive, desire, is my entire essence. And this desire wants to all the time be full. Full with what? Doesn't matter. Drugs. Killing. Looting. Doing something. Maybe also doing good things, but usually not. Because the desire is the evil inclination. That's how we all are. And the evil inclination means that we can't take others into consideration whatsoever. And my desire is actually my boss. I do what it demands. And I'm not aware that this desire isn't me, actually. It isn't. It's a desire that exists in me, like some kind of a virus, suppose, or something that exists inside a person, like a germ or something. And this desire controls me. And I relate to it as if it were myself, but it's not. It's my Pharaoh, as we call it in the wisdom of Kabbalah, or it doesn't matter how we call it, but it's what controls me from the inside to my detriment, because this control tells me, do as I command you to do. And I want to grow in a completely different way, suppose. But I can't. So I smoke, I drink, I steal, I do different things that my desire directs me to do. And then, who am I and what am I? Meaning that desire does not ask a person for his permission, but dictates to a person what to want. And here comes the intellect. And from the events of life, out of experience, out of different indirect supporting, aiding systems, so to speak, can tell a person, wait a second, this is not to your benefit. In the past, you got such and such blows because of that, and so on and so forth. Listen to what others tell you. Meaning the intellect comes in order to balance out the desire. But the desire, to realize it, it feels good, comfortable. So the world of desires and emotions is more on the animal level, and the intellect is more on the human level. Yeah, the intellect is cold. It tells me, yes, no, the mind. And then it's hard for me to activate my intellect, my mind, and control my emotions with it. My mom told me, be a good kid. Study this, that, and me. I wanted only to play with my ball in the backyard, and that's it. That's the only thing I wanted in life. So now I can say that mom was right, but it doesn't help. How can we, throughout life, the moment I have incorrect desires that are bad for me, how can I control them with the mind and balance them out? So, why were people given emotions? Isn't it enough for them to just have an intellect? But then it's a machine. It's a machine. But a smart machine, a wise machine. Only people have these kinds of systems. The still, the vegetative, and the animate don't. Nature leaves them no room between emotion and intellect. No free space. But there, the intellect and the emotion are balanced in such a way that an animal always chooses instinctively what is to its benefit, and only in a way that it protects now what it has. It has no feeling of future. It has, obviously, the feeling of the present, that here and now, this and that is what it has to do. And therefore it says that beasts make no mistakes, only people do. So mistakes are something human because of this.
Yeah.
Because they're operated by their emotions. But we have to remember that our broad world of emotions is what creates our life experience, depending on how much will we later have to pay and regret the experience. And this is why the wisdom of Kabbalah comes and explains how can we reach such an experience where we will realize all of our desires correctly, and that we will balance it out with our intellect in a way that will reach the best possible state. But it means that we don't have to take all of our desires into consideration with all that they're demanding of us in every given moment. But we have to tie the desires that we have now with the goal that we have to reach, and in the gap between what the desire tells me to do now and that distant future goal, I have to find some kind of a correct direction, meaning to work with the intellect, to work with my mind. If I work only with my emotion, then I have to see, will I be beaten or not? Can I get along with this or can't I? It's like a little child or a person that's not really developed. People that are more developed, they know how to control their emotions. Suppose politicians, and in general. By the way, business people, it's a very good example. Good business people know how to take decisions based on the intellect, but also leave room for the emotion. They leave room for emotion only in order to feel that money is good. Exactly. Will it work or not? But that's already intellect, the mind. Their emotion is only in order to develop a desire for money, a desire for success. This desire is nonetheless emotional. But to realize it, that's completely intellectual. Sometimes you have to make a decision. If we're talking about business. Sometimes you have to take a decision, like a kind of gamble. If you only follow your intellect, maybe you'll make a certain decision. But after you examined everything completely realistically and so on, if you listen a bit more to your emotion, maybe you'll save yourself from bankruptcy or some bad project that intellectually it seems okay, but you felt that something, because you're in a society where that's how everyone is, like you, that are included of intellect and emotion. And then to only work with your intellect, some computer that will work instead of you in society, that won't work. You won't be able to do that. You have to also integrate with them, get their emotional impressions, and then to scrutinize it with your mind. And after an intellectual scrutiny of your emotions and that of others, you build a more or less correct system for realization. This is our problem. People, they're complex. Yeah. Okay, up until now we talked about the emotion. Now let's talk about the intellect. Suppose there's a person with a brilliant mind. 100% intellect. The brain works like a computer. What's missing? His mind so developed and controls him 100% and he has no emotion, seemingly, right? I'm sure he has, but suppose. The other extreme, what is that person missing? What is he lacking? He's lacking the feeling of life. What he's lacking is to work with the mind in a whole and complete way, which is actually what? Who gives the mind information if not the desire, the emotion? The desire is what I want to achieve, to attain, what I want to reach, come to. And so If I don't have a goal, if I have no aspiration, if I don't have something, we are feeling beings, first and foremost. Rationalistic people have goals and desires. They actually act as machines. You gave me an example that they don't have. A rationalistic person, meaning he has no emotions, he's like a computer. Yeah, but you said maybe he doesn't have desires. He does. He has aspirations, maybe he's even a billionaire. But as a human being, he doesn't work from here. I mean, I don't know how to explain it. I'm trying to understand. What is such a person lacking? A pure rationalist. What will he work with? What will he work with? With what he grasps in his mind. He sets goals, plans how to get there, encounters problems, solves them, but everything comes from here. But the goal itself, what is it? It could be something in business. $100 million. Suppose, you know, something small. What is $100 million? I'm asking. $100 million is a kind of an inner feeling. Feeling. It's not intellectual, it's not a number, it's not a suitcase with dollars. It's an inner feeling of what do these papers give him? What kind of control, sense of security, standard of living, what can he bring closer to himself, things that he wants, a house, woman, children, ship, something that'll give him pleasure. He has to break it down into details to feel it. And pleasures, otherwise he won't feel it. Otherwise, this paper, $10 million, suppose, it'll stay on the level of paper. He has to smell it, to taste it. What is it given? Because we are feeling beings. Our basis is emotion. And the mind, the intellect, comes only in order to help us, to somehow guide ourselves in order to attain what we want, what we want to feel. And therefore, a person who's merely a machine, pure intellect, this is a person that I can't understand. There are those that are more or less, but the emotion is at the very basis of human beings. When you just described this, I understood that it's a mistake or even a kind of ignorance in the way that we relate to these things. A person could seem to us very purely intellectual and emotionless, but afterwards he reaches such a crisis, plunges into drugs and whatnot, because all in all, he can't reach pleasure. He doesn't correctly interpret what's worthwhile attaining. So that's the thing. Yeah, what for? Yeah, many times we see people that are considered to be very successful that at a certain point in life they simply fall, break, and usually it's very painful because they were, you know, at a very high peak. Yeah. So, one more thing. Up until now, we talked about a person who's too intellectual, works too much with his intellect. Now, let's talk about a person who's too emotional. That's not good. Why? That's even worse. Why? Then he's like wind. Or like a blade of grass in the field that moves according to how the wind blows. I want this, I want that. We can see it on little children. I want this, no, I want that, no, this. And it always seems like the desire changes every moment. But in children, it's in order to develop them. But if it's a grown-up person, we say that he is unbalanced, mentally ill or something. that he has to balance himself with the intellect. So, here there's much to say about education and preparing this person for life and school and how should they do it. Everything that we see, this entire behavior among the younger generation till the age of 20, 25, it's all a lack of balance between intellect and emotion. And what comes later is all a result. But throughout these ages, till the age of 17 or 20, it's possible to work on it and help a person correctly enter life, how to be in balance all the time, and to find that whole and perfect state, the state of inner comfort, the balance between intellect and emotion. Is it possible to balance the emotions? Of course it is. How do you do it? With the help of the environment. Everything's possible. I really want something. My friends or someone come up and tell me and explain that you better not. And I integrate with their emotions and I let it go. And there are many such things. I wanted this, I didn't want that. So on purpose I entered one or another kind of environment, and then with the help of the environment, the influence of the environment, I changed my attitude toward a certain emotion. Intellect is something that you can buy, acquire. The emotion that constantly awakens from the inside, this is the thing. We have like this information that's awakening within us, and it makes our desire grow and grow all the time. But what can you do about a desire that's growing all the time? So, correspondingly, I have to acquire a greater and greater intellect all the time that will know how to deal with the emotion. And this is how we have to teach the younger generation and to show them the kind of society that there has to be, by which he can balance himself, and in that balance to see his perfect state in life. Emotion, intellect, intellect, emotion, and for them to all the time be balanced. How would you define a correct emotion? A correct emotion is that no matter what awakens in life, whether before me or within me, I feel good. I just feel good. I'm in control of the situation. I understand it. I feel it. I live in balance with the environment, with my life, until I pass away. It doesn't matter. Until your last moment, you feel good. That's the measure. Okay, can you give us some advice how to balance the emotion with the intellect? Only with the help of the correct environment. Meaning what? It means that I have to find an environment that will always be able to supplement the emotion that awakens in me every time in one direction or another, and the environment will be like a damper, something that kind of helps me break all of these inner excitements and eruptions, and to bring them to a state where I'll be able to realize it, but in a way that's convenient to me and to others, meaning that I have to examine myself in relation to the environment, whether what I want to do is accepted by my environment. And for sure, it's okay for me to realize it, it's in my ability, it's to my benefit, to their benefit, and everything's going to be fine. Therefore, the correct balance between the intellect and the emotion, or the intellect and the desire, it's all done by the environment. Dr. Lightman, I see that there's much more to say about this. Unfortunately, our time's up. Thank you very much. Thank you, Nitsa. Thank you for being with us. Till next time.